From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we return to the United Nations General Assembly's general debate, and we open with this statement from the President of Cuba, Miguel Díaz-Canel.
We are living in uncertain times under the devastating impact of a pandemic, which has sharpened the structural inequalities as well as global crisis. The role of multilateralism and of the United Nations are increasingly important, and international cooperation has been inadequate. The application of neoliberal formulas during decades has reduced the abilities of states to address the needs of their population. The most vulnerable have remained without protection, while the richest nations, the elites, and pharmaceutical transnationals are increasing their profits. Combining efforts and determination for the good of humankind is not only urgent today, it's also morally crucial. More than 4.5 million people have died as a result of the pandemic, which has worsened living conditions on the planet. Its consequences and impact throughout all of our societies are incalculable, but already we know that they will not be short-lived. We can see this in the report on the Sustainable Development Goals of 2021, while the International Labor Organization says that in 2022 there will be in the world 205 million unemployed persons. It's clear to all that we have already seriously undermined the objective for sustainable development to eradicate poverty for 2030, a time when it is projected that the global poverty rate will be 7%, around 600 million people. In this bleak context, COVID-19 vaccines are the only hope. More than 5 billion doses have already been administered throughout the world by August 2021. However, more than 80% of those were applied in middle-income or high-income countries, and their populations represent much less than a half of the total population of the planet. Hundreds of millions of people in low-income countries are still awaiting for the first dose, and they don't even know when they will receive it. While this is happening, it is inconceivable that in 2020, a global military expenditure was almost $2 trillion U.S. dollars. How many lives would have been saved if those resources had been devoted to health or to the production and distribution of vaccines? The possible responses to this question involves a paradigm shift and to transform a deeply unequal and anti-democratic international order, which places selfishness and petty interests of a minority before the legitimate aspirations of millions of human beings. We will never tire of repeating that we must put an end to this waste and irrational capitalist consumption and production patterns, to environmental depredation, and to the factors that cause climate change, which threaten the existence of the human species. Our effort must be collective. But developed countries have the moral obligation to assume the greatest responsibility because they're the ones who caused the current situation and they have the resources to correct it. We have to fight so that solidarity, cooperation, and mutual respect will prevail if we want to provide an effective response to the needs and yearnings of all of those peoples and to preserve what is most valuable, human life and human dignity. Our peoples have the right to live in peace and security, to development, to well-being, and to social justice. A United Nations, which is revitalized, democratized, and strengthened, is called upon to play a central role in this effort. Mr. President, under the leadership and with the ongoing incitement of the United States, we see a serious international rift being promoted with the harmful use and abuse of economic coercive measures, which has become a central instrument of U.S. foreign policy. The government of that country is threatening, extorting, and pressuring sovereign states to take a stand and to act against those who they identify as their adversaries. They demand that their allies build coalitions to overthrow legitimate governments. They default on trade commitments. They abandoned and banned certain technologies, and they apply unjustified judicial measures against citizens of countries who don't bend to their will. They often use the term international community to define a small group of governments that accompany Washington's will without questioning it. The other countries, the vast majority of members of this organization, it seems that there is no room for us in the definition of international community, which is advocated by the United States. It is a behavior which is associated with cultural and ideological intolerance, with a marked racist influence, and with hegemonic aims. It's not possible or acceptable that we identify the right to economic and technological development of a nation as a threat, as it's not possible to question the right of a state to develop a political, economic, social, and cultural system which is sovereignly chosen by its people. In other words, we are seeing today unacceptable political practices in the international context that go against the universal commitment to defend the United Nations Charter, including the sovereign right to self-determination. Independent and sovereign states are being subject to all kinds of pressure to bend to the will of Washington and to an order based on its capricious rules. Mr. President, for more than 60 years, the government of the United States has not refrained for 1 minute in its attacks against Cuba. But in this crucial and challenging moment for all nations, its aggressiveness has gone beyond the limits. The most cruel and the longest economic, commercial, and financial blockade which has ever been imposed on any country has intensified in an opportunistic and criminal fashion in the midst of this pandemic. And the current Democratic administration is maintaining without altering the 243 coercive measures adopted by the administration of Donald Trump, including adding Cuba to the spurious and immoral list of countries that allegedly sponsor terrorism. It's in this context that they are launching against our country and non-conventional war, where the U.S. government has dedicated publicly millions of dollars through campaigns of lies and manipulation, which use new information technologies and other digital platforms to project inside and outside the country a totally false image of the Cuban reality, sowing confusion, aiming to destabilize, to discredit the country, and to justify the regime change doctrine. They have done all this to wipe the Cuban Revolution off the map. They don't accept alternatives to the model that they conceive of for their backyard. Their plan is perverse and incompatible with the democracy and the freedom that they advocate. But our enemies must know clearly that we will not surrender the fatherland and the revolution that several generations of patriots have bequeathed to us. I'd like to reiterate today before the respected and real community of nations that every year has voted unanimously against the blockade what was expressed a few years ago by General Raul Castro, and I quote, "Cuba is not afraid of lies, nor will it kneel to pressure, conditions, or impositions, wherever they may come from." Mr. President, the colossal challenges do not intimidate us. We continue to build for Cuba. We practice selfless solidarity with those who require support. And we are also grateful for what the support we receive from governments, peoples, friends, and the Cuban community outside of Cuba. I would like to thank all of those for their support at this situation, people who extol the values of humankind and unconditional international cooperation. At the same time, in response to the requests received and guided by our vocation of solidarity and humanism, Cuba has sent 4,900 assistants organized in 57 medical brigades to 40 countries and territories affected by COVID-19. Those dedicated healthcare workers have not relented 1 minute in their fight against the pandemic inside and outside of Cuba. They're the same ones who took to the streets to help the patient people after the devastating earthquake just a few weeks ago. Those who travel from a remote place to a Cuban province without stopping to deliver their expertise and their knowledge in their mission to save lives. They're more than daily heroes, the pride of our nation and symbol of our vocation for justice. Dozens of public figures and thousands of people have signed their candidacy for the Nobel Peace Prize. Likewise, we are proud of the scientific Cuban community who, in the midst of great shortcomings, have developed three vaccines and vaccine candidates against COVID-19. They represent the embodiment of the idea of the commander-in-chief who asserted that the future of our homeland must necessarily be a future of men and women of science. Thanks to the support of our men and women of science, and healthcare workers, during the first 10 days of this month, more than 15.8 million doses of the Abdallah Soberana 02 and Soberana Plus vaccines have been administered, and 37.8% of the Cuban population is fully vaccinated. We expect to achieve full immunization by the end of 2021, which will make it possible for us to advance in the struggle against the new outbreak of the pandemic. Mr. President, we ratify our aspiration to achieve full independence of our America and to be a socially and economically integrated Latin American and Caribbean nation, capable of living up to the commitment established in the proclamation of Latin America and the Caribbean as a zone of peace, in the face of attempts to reimpose the Monroe Doctrine and the neocolonial domination. We are opposed to every attempt to destabilize and to subvert the constitutional order and the civic and military unity and destroy the work that was initiated by Commander Hugo Chavez Frias and continued by President Nicolas Maduro Moros in favor of the Venezuelan people. We reiterate that the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela will always be able to count on Cuba's solidarity. We reaffirm our firm support to the brotherly people of Nicaragua and its National Reconciliation and Unity Government, led by Commander Daniel Ortega, who are courageously and proudly defending the achievements attained against the threats and interventionist actions of the U.S. government. We support the Caribbean nation's claim for fair reparations for the horrors caused by slavery and the slave trade. We likewise support the right to a just, special, and differentiated treatment, which is crucial to meet the challenges resulting from climate change, natural disasters, the unjust international financial system, and the difficult conditions imposed by the COVID-19 pandemic. We reaffirm that the brotherly people of Puerto Rico should be free and independent after more than a century of submission to colonial domination. We stand in solidarity with the Republic of Argentina in its just claim for its sovereign rights over the Malvinas, the South Georgia and South Sandwich Islands, and the surrounding maritime areas. We reiterate our commitment to peace in Colombia. We are convinced that a political solution and a dialogue between the parties is the appropriate way to achieve it. We also call for an end to foreign interference in Syria and full respect for its sovereignty and territorial integrity. While we support the search for a peaceful and negotiated solution to the situation imposed on that sister nation, we call for a just, comprehensive, all-encompassing, and lasting solution to the Middle East conflict, which includes the end of the Israeli occupation of the usurped Palestinian territories and the exercise of the inalienable right of the Palestinian people to build its own state within the pre-1967 borders and with East Jerusalem as its capital. We condemn the unilateral coercive measures imposed against the Islamic Republic of Iran. We reaffirm our unswerving solidarity with the Saharan people. We strongly condemned the unilateral and unjust sanctions against the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. We reiterate our unwavering support to the One China principle and oppose any attempt to harm the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the People's Republic of China, as well as any interference in its internal affairs. We reject the attempts to expand NATO's presence up to the Russian borders. The interference in Russia's affairs with regard to its sovereignty and the imposition of unilateral and unjust sanctions against that country. We call for an end to foreign interference in the internal affairs of the Republic of Belarus and reiterate our solidarity with President Alexander Lukashenko and the brotherly people of Belarus. The United Nations cannot ignore the lessons learned in Afghanistan. It took two decades of occupation, a toll of thousands of deaths, 10 million displaced, and billions of dollars in costs, which turned into profits for the military-industrial complex. It took all that to reach the conclusion that terrorism cannot be prevented or fought with bombs, that occupation only leads to destruction, and that no country has the right to impose its will on sovereign nations. Afghanistan is not an isolated case. It became obvious that wherever the United States intervenes, instability, death, and hardship increase, leaving behind long-lasting scars. Mr. President, we reaffirm Cuba's determination to continue speaking the truth in a transparent fashion. However much this might be upsetting to some, defending the principles and values we believe in, supporting just causes, confronting violations as much as we have confronted foreign aggressions, colonialism, racism, and apartheid, and struggling ceaselessly for the greatest possible justice, prosperity, and development of our peoples, who deserve a better world. Thank you very much.
We also bring you the presentation made to the UN General Assembly by President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela. We bring you as much of that as time allows.
As we begin this new session of the General Assembly, this is the second time we have met in the General Assembly since the COVID-19 pandemic struck. We are addressing the General Assembly virtually from our respective countries and from official government offices. I would like to greet all ambassadors and authorities who, in the midst of the pandemic, have shared their views, whether in person in New York or from their own countries, their positions about how we can build a new world of peace for humanity this century. A new world based on cooperation and dialogue, respecting the ideological, cultural, political, and religious diversity of people throughout the world. This new world, this new human community, must be free of hegemonic empires. It must be liberated. Liberated from any hegemons or any empires' attempts at economic, financial, military, or political domination. Liberated from those who over centuries plundered, dominated, exploited, and oppressed people throughout the world with their old rapacious colonialism. They are those who are today attempting to impose new forms of colonialism on our people, new forms of domination, looting, oppression, and exploitation of people throughout the world. That is why, in this General Assembly, overshadowed by the pandemic, from the very heart of our beloved fatherland, Venezuela is calling for a new world free from colonialism, a new world without imperialism, a new world without any dominant hegemon, a new world of cooperation, belonging to a human community with a shared destiny. It is a multipolar, pluricentric world for which we yearn and for which we are issuing a rallying cry with all people of the world, with the peoples of the South, especially in the non-aligned movement doctrine, the South-South doctrine, our doctrine, our vision, our commitment and certainty. Many countries have strongly supported Venezuela as it has grappled with the circumstances of the past few years. Dozens of countries represented here at the United Nations have provided support, cooperation, and solidarity to our people. They have listened to the truth from the voices of Venezuelans themselves. On many previous occasions at this General Assembly and in other parts of the United Nations system, Venezuela has frequently spoken out against the ferocious onslaught, the merciless campaign waged against our country by the elites that have governed the United States. With the complicity of the elites at the helm of organizations in Europe and elsewhere, they have sought to manipulate international organizations and international law in an attempt to justify their merciless campaign and criminal aggressions against the noble, peaceful, and democratic people of Venezuela. We have spoken out about this situation on many prior occasions and in many different organizations, and we are doing so again here today, before the United Nations General Assembly in New York. At this session of the General Assembly in September 2021, Venezuela again denounces a savage campaign, a permanent systematic aggression waged through economic, financial, cruel oil sanctions, a persecution of the right to economic freedom, violating the economic rights and guarantees to which all people are entitled. This is a fierce assault on the right to buy what our country needs, and on the right to sell what our country produces. Particularly Venezuela's immense oil and mining wealth, which it has developed for decades. Bank accounts are being targeted. Our gold, held in the legal international reserves at the Venezuelan Central Bank in London, has been seized. And billions of dollars held in bank accounts in the United States, Europe, and beyond have been frozen. Venezuelan oil and mining companies are prevented from selling their products and opening bank accounts to pay and receive money and to trade freely, as is provided for under international law. This is financial, monetary, economic persecution, which is systematic, cruel, and criminal. And Venezuela is raising its voice here to denounce it before the people of the world. For years, we have faced threats. For years, we have faced aggressions. Nevertheless, I can say to you today, from the heart of Caracas, where the liberators of America were born, that the Venezuelan people, with their great capacity for resilience and resistance, the Venezuelan people have risen. This year, 2021, is a particularly special year for Venezuela, as we are marking 200 years since the victory of the Battle of Carabobo, which was decisive in our country's independence. This year, we have progressed from a cruel, painful time of resistance to one of recovery and prolonged growth in the domains of science, innovation, and technology, with the spiritual resilience of a hard-working people who refuse to give in. A free, rebellious people who have flourished in spite of the challenges of the past few years. We have taken the path of recovery and holistic growth for our nation. We have chosen to unleash our productive strengths despite the hellish blockade, despite the criminal persecution and cruel torture of our nation's economic and social life. We can thus say to the people of the world, with bravery, with decisiveness, with intelligence and wisdom, yes, we can. We can stand up to these imperialist aggressions and prosper. That is why we once again call for, indeed demand, that all the criminal sanctions imposed on the Venezuelan economy and society by the United States and the European Union be lifted. Our demand is morally just, and we are making it on behalf of 30 million Venezuelan men and women. We are grateful for the support of many UN member states in helping us advance towards achieving this key goal of our country and our region. I would like to take this opportunity to underscore our support for and solidarity with the Republic of Cuba, the people of Cuba, whose demand that all elements of the economic and trade embargo be lifted have been supported by a majority vote at the UN on 27 occasions. Venezuela also speaks out in favor of justice and humanity for Cuba, a republic and a heroic people. Our country has successfully overcome all of these circumstances. That is why we would like to convey to you all the official results of the report of the UN Special Rapporteur on Sanctions, who visited Venezuela earlier this year for a period of 7 days. She drafted a very objective and reasonable report on the subject of these criminal sanctions and recommended that they be immediately lifted and that international law and international humanitarian law be respected, as well as Venezuela's right to freedom, to economic, trade, and financial guarantees, and the full enjoyment of the rights to which any sovereign country belonging to the United Nations is entitled.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.